good evening and welcome. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com, and today is Thursday, March 20th, 2014. And as most of you are, or at least those of you who are aware of our celestial and seasonal changes, tonight is the, or today is the spring solstice. It's the days are equal. The night is as long as the day, the 12 hours, and we're going into the summer season, or spring actually. And another little tidbit here, because of the lunar eclipse that's happening tonight, this is going to be the darkest night in over 500 years. I don't know where that tidbit came from, but it just came across my desk. Had to share it. This evening, I'm really happy to have Harold Covington as my guest. Harold, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Glad to have you. How you been?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good.
Okay, well, let me ask you an off-the-wall question. What do you think happened to that Malaysian airliner?
Okay. Without going off into a long spritz and without getting all supernatural on you, since there doesn't seem to be any visible debris, which is very, very unusual for an airline crash.
Wait a minute. The airliner that crashed in the Pentagon didn't have any debris either. I'm just saying.
Well, my guess would be, if I had to choose one, that it has been hijacked for some weird purpose, and maybe we'll see it coming over the skyline in San Francisco and crashing into a gay wedding in the Castro District or whatever. But failing that, if it was an accident, it must have been something really immediate, and the whole plane must have just disintegrated in the middle of the air. But frankly, I don't know, and I don't think anybody else knows from what I can gather. I don't have cable TV, and I gather CNN has gone absolutely berserk on this. It's now missing airliner all the time to get their ratings up. It's just a case of all these people rabbiting on and on and on about something that nobody actually knows anything about. So my guess is as good as anyone's, and that's all it would be, a guess. I think we'll probably find out someday, but until then, you know, I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay, well, I'm just checking. I just want to get an opinion because everybody has one. You know, I wanted to get yours and take the temperature on it. My next question for you has to do with the situation in Ukraine. What is your opinion about what's going on there?
I think that what we're seeing in the Ukraine is a natural adjustment. Periodically down through history, in 1919 at Versailles, and then after the Soviet Union went down, we got this situation where all these politicians in expensive suits sit around stuffing themselves with martini and rich food and drawing borders on maps that look pretty. This appears to be what happened in Ukraine. Apparently the Ukraine that existed prior to a few weeks ago was, I don't know the statistics, but it was at least half ethnic Russian. And Russia is simply reclaiming something that, by law of nature, is theirs, just like the Germans were trying to do prior to 1939. And the Kiev government does contain some people in it who seem to have some pretty good ideas from our point of view, and I wish them all the best. I do think that from what I can see, the viewpoint of things like Svoboda and the right sector and whatnot is, it's anti-Jewish, which is always a step in the right direction, but it's also largely anti-Russian. Now, I can understand that for the Ukrainians in view of what they have suffered for the past 70, 80 years from, in essence, Russian Jews acting as communist Bolshevik, you know, commissars, and in view of what Stalin and the Russians did to the Ukraine over a number of famines and wars.
Well, they starved them. They starved them. It's called the Holodomor. And I've been to Ukraine, and I remember going with my translator, a lovely young woman named Ina, going to meet her mom and her grandmother, and had dinner with them. And after dinner, the grandma still scrapes the crumbs off the table and eats them. She will waste nothing because she lived through the Holodomor. And you really hit the nail on the head. It's, again, it's Russian Jews who did this Bolsheviks.
Right, yeah.
And that's what bothers me about the government in Kiev right now. Because the first thing they do is they stick up some Jew banker. And that's the last person who I want to see run a country. I think Jews should be forbidden from participating in government in any capacity.
I think they've also got a couple of Muslims in there. And that's, it just seems to be a hodgepodge of just a little bit of everything, but apparently they're in no shape to take on the Russians, and it's pretty clear, I think, at this point, that unless Obama and the Democrats have gone completely insane, which I suppose is always a possibility, but unless they've completely lost their cookies, they're not going to, you know, intervene militarily to prevent Russia from reabsorbing the Crimea back into motherland. And from what I can see, it looks like a done deal. But from now on, for the next 5 or 6 years at least, we're going to have all this shouting and jumping up and down. It's given the so-called Western democracies a good excuse to revive the Cold War, which is what they want, not the Russians, contrary to the media. Putin's Russia has the West, if you want to call it that, worried, not only because of the potential for economic competition and the general refusal to play ball with the so-called democracies, i.e. Zionist puppet regimes around Europe, the Western Hemisphere, but also because of things like his strong stand against homosexuality. Right now, as obscene as it sounds, homosexuality is the United States' largest cultural export. The United States government and the United States power structure has decided in its infinite wisdom that everybody has to be like us. There has to be Burger King, Starbucks on every corner, and they tried imposing that in Iraq. That did fly. But not just that, but everybody's got to be pro-homosexual and pro-feminist and into weird sexual deviations in their culture and in their society, and the countries of the world simply aren't having any. I hate to say this. As you know, I'm no fan of blacks or Africans, but I think it's ridiculous when countries like Uganda and Nigeria show a stronger moral sense and a stronger concern for the welfare of their people and the future of their race than any white country does, except, of course, for a few exceptions like Russia.
Yeah.
They banned homosexuality, and I understand John Kerry is going over to Uganda to lecture the president of Uganda as to how he has to embrace buggery and all this sort of stuff. And it's just, it's insane. As a world power, this is what we're doing with our power. We're telling everybody to become queers. It's lunatic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree more. I think it is. It's bedbug crazy. Let's just say that.
So, anyway, I
just wanted to point out something else about Ukraine while we're on the topic, and that is people have to realize that Kiev was the capital of Russia back in the Tsarist days. People forget this. It was moved to St. Petersburg in the 16th, 17th century, but prior to that, that is the ancestral home of the Russian monarchy. And if anybody has a claim to it, it's Russia.
Well, Ukraine was originally founded back in the Dark Ages, literally, by a tribe of people called the Rus, from which Russia gets its name. And the Rus were essentially Viking. You know, the Vikings didn't only sail west to colonize and plunder and trade, they went east as well. And the original Ukraine was, in essence, a Viking colony or a Viking kingdom, where a lot of Russians and a lot of Ukrainians get those tall, blonde, good looks because they're descendants of the Norse.
Well, let me ask you, this is a little conversation whiplash, but I'll ask the question anyway. Is it my imagination, or have the Scandinavian, the typical what we will call the Viking peoples, have they been like sissified and turned into a bunch of little pussies? What happened to our fierce Vikings?
Well, a lot of our Swedish comrades in the Northwest Front, or fans, audience, whatever you want to call it, would disagree with that. I don't know if you follow what we do here, but we've had interviews on RFN and whatnot from Swedish comrades who come over here. I find it a rare honor that there are people who actually fly all the way from Sweden to Seattle to come and talk to me. And when they do, I try to get them on RFN. But the Swedish people, and I presume the Norse people as a whole, Danes, Norwegians, Finns, so forth and so on, are still pretty solid personally. They do have some problems. They've got a very bad Muslim immigration problem. They have problems with these incredibly left-wingy, socialist, social democrat, wigged-out governments that they have. It's interesting that a lot of our Democrats over here in the Labour Party in Britain holds up Sweden and Norway as the ultimate social welfare state. It's starting to get old. The people that I talk to in Sweden, and we have a lot of fans in Sweden especially, but also Norway and Denmark, but they are really getting tired of what their governments are doing to them, especially bringing in these totally, completely unassimilable Muslim immigrants from places like Somalia and Morocco. And like all non-white immigrants into white societies, they cluster together. They, in essence, live off the state. They take entry-level jobs. They take up goods and services that were supposed to go to Swedes and native-born Scandinavians. The crime problem is horrible. For the first time in almost in living memory, white women in Sweden and Norway and Denmark and Finland have to worry about walking down the street and getting pulled into alleys and gang raped. They've got murders and hate crimes and everything like that directed against the white majority, which the government completely covers up. It's bad, and the Scandinavian people are not total fools. They see this. Of course, in Europe, they've got all these hate laws, so if they so much as whisper a protest, they either get fired from their jobs or put in jail or racial incitement, etc., etc. It's as bad as the rest of Europe in some parts of Sweden. I understand some parts of Sweden are now practically like the Istanbul slums. So the people themselves are tired of it. They're like all the other white people all across the world. They're waiting for someone to take the lead. They're waiting for someone to stand up and say enough, and it has to be someone with enough celebrity and enough recognition in the system media, because that's what they're used to responding to, so that they can write a permission slip. That's the problem with white people the world over. We're rule followers, and we can't be brave, we can't revolt, we can't be heroic freedom fighters until somebody from the world of celebrity gives us a permission slip to do so. So the Swedes and the Scandinavians are like every other white nation on earth. They're waiting for someone to take the lead. They're looking for their permission slip. What we have to hope for is that eventually our people will come to realize that they don't need a permission slip from anybody to solve these problems. They need to just go ahead, get the guns out of the closet, do it.
Well, Harold, I couldn't think of truer words, couldn't agree with you more. You know, I look at what I will call Article 61 of the Magna Carta, which says that we've got a bad situation in this country. It's bad globally for white people. That's just how it is. But whenever you have a crooked government and you have crooked law enforcement, you have crooked judges, you have a crooked system, which is what we have this country, every country. The deck has been stacked against us before we were even born. And it's primarily, I'm going to say this, Jewish controlled. And Jews have disproportional representation in most of our key institutions. And the Magna Carta states in Article 61 that if this is the case, that the people have the right to bring these people to task and take their life if necessary to make them heal. And really advocate this, because the Magna Carta, like it or not, folks, it is the foundation from all of Western law, all of European law, all of American law, everything. That's where that is the wellspring. That is the foundational document. And I really think we need to apply the principles of the Magna Carta. It's like in anything. You know, whenever what you're doing isn't working, you go back to the fundamentals. And the Magna Carta is the fundamental document Western civilization, Western law is based on.
You know, you get all these various conservatives moaning and groaning and protesting that Obama is violating the Constitution by ruling by executive order, i.e. imperial decree, and changing laws on a whim and so forth and so on. And they cry that he's violating the Constitution. He's doing worse than that. He's violating the Magna Carta, because one of the basic principles of the Magna Carta, possibly the greatest principle in the Magna Carta, was to establish the rule of law as paramount, and to establish that everyone is subject to the law, including the king. And when Obama basically acts like a king or a dictator and does whatever the hell he wants up there and nothing is done about it, we're not just losing 1787 when the Constitution was instituted, we're losing 1215 when the Magna Carta. We're going back literally to the Dark Ages, when the only law was what's called volus princeps lex est, which means the will of the prince is the law. And for many thousands of years, that in essence was how society was governed, and today that's how most third world societies are governed. The great legal advance of Western white society was things like the Magna Carta and other, you know, charters of rights, liberties, etc. The whole concept that someone is born with rights and liberties, and that these are subject to law, and that there are, you know, no one is above the law. I mean, these concepts simply do not exist in non-white society. They never made their appearance because the people living in those societies are mentally, genetically incapable of formulating such concepts. White people are the only ones who really have laws as such as we understand the term. White people are the only ones who have ever created society where there were such things as rights. And when you lose the race that created that concept, that thought...
We're headed back to savagery is what will happen if you lose the white race.
Well, literally, in this country, you see it. There are parts of California and the Southwest and areas like Detroit, which are ruled by blacks and browns of various kinds. I mean, my God, look at Detroit. This is what happens when you have black rule over a period of about almost 40 years, even within the context of a fairly stable society. If it wasn't for the rest of the country propping up places like Detroit, Birmingham, and Newark, and all these other, you know, black-run spots, it would be literal savagery. They would probably be just eating each other in the streets.
Anybody who passes through will get thrown into the cooking pot.
It's almost that bad. Now, my heart goes out to that guy that shot that Negress on his porch. He was one of the few remaining, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry to say. This was happened about 6 or 8 months ago, but he was one of the few remaining white people living in one of these Detroit suburbs. And about 5 o'clock in the morning, this screaming Negress who was drunk or high or whatever, and I think somebody cut her up or something. Anyway, she was on the porch of his house screaming and pounding and demanding to be let in. And guy had kids in the house, so he basically fired through the door and he killed her. And now, of course, he's looking at the rest of his life in prison. But people should not have to face that kind of problem, that kind of decision. All of these problems that we have are caused by the presence in this society of black people, brown people, unassimilable trash of various kinds who cannot conform to our way of life and who have caused nothing but trouble ever since they came here. All of these problems we have are not caused by their upbringing or racism or anything like that. It's caused by the fact that they are here, period.
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, the establishment, if you will, the liberal establishment, wants to find excuses for black failure. You know, the Negroes just don't perform. They've never devised a standardized IQ test that brings them to parity. They just don't have it. You know, there's other issues. You know, they've got thicker bones with less marrow in their bodies, which makes them very strong, very durable. However, they don't fight infection very well. It weakens their immune system. There's differences in blood type. There's a number of things there that nobody wants to talk about. Now, I hear our music coming up for our break, Harold. Let's save the thought. We'll be right back, folks. More with Harold Covington right after this break.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret.
Well, good evening, welcome back. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com. Today is Thursday, March 20th, 2014. This is the spring solstice, or the equinox, I guess. It's not the solstice, the equinox. Forgive me for misspeaking. My guest this evening is author Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. And we were talking about nobody in the mainstream wants to recognize the fact that there are differences among the races. They want to lump us all together. Is like we're all one, we're all the same. And the guy who came up with that concept was a guy named Franz Boas, who was a member of the Frankfurt School, who moved to the U.S. in 1933, the Frankfurt School did, entrenched themselves in Columbia University, and have systematically taken over the academia of the United States and have taken good science and turned it on its ear. And you know, we have to undo these trends. We have to really let science be science.
The ultimate goal of the agenda, racially speaking, is to have everybody on Earth be kind of a cafe au lait, coffee-colored brown. Basically, everybody pretty much looks like Mexicans, and we're all working in various, you know, low-level, labor-intensive jobs on the big global plantation ruled over by a very small Jewish and left-wing and homosexual elite at the top. Hopefully, many of your listeners as well have seen a movie called Soylent Green. Well, that's what we're headed for, except in Soylent Green, the mobs, the proles, so to speak, were all white. The world of Soylent Green that's coming, the lower classes, which will be 99.1% of the population or so, will all be baby poop brown. And that's why they want the mixture of the races, because you see, when you mix the races, when you mix the chromosome and put it all into one big sludge pot, when you destroy a race, you destroy simultaneously the culture that it created and its ability to create any future culture or achievements. When the white race is destroyed, it's not just what we've created that will be lost. There will be nobody left to create anything new. Now, what I'm going to be interested to see is what happens when this big coffee-colored pile of goo that the Jews and the liberals and the left-wing types want to create comes up against people who have maintained their racial homogeneity, like, say, the Chinese. Some of our people think that the world eventually will descend into this big boiling pot of brown savagery and we'll just lose everything and we'll all go back to the jungle and start beating on hollow logs. I don't think so. I think that that result will be achieved briefly by the liberals if we don't do anything about it, and the Jews. And then the Chinese are going to come in, and the Chinese, frankly, are going to wipe them all out, and eventually what we will have 8, 9, 10 centuries from now is one big oriental ant hive or ant colony on the face of the earth. Long ago, Confucius once said that it was written in the stars of destiny or whatever that all the world would someday be Chinese. And maybe he was right. Because that's going to be the ultimate result of all Jewish and liberal policy. Once they succeed in exterminating the white race and making everybody sort of coffee-colored wage slaves on some big consumer plantation run by Ronald McDonald, they're not going to be able to stand against the Orient. Our ancestors didn't refer to the gooks as yellow peril for nothing.
Well, let me make a comment on here, because it seems to me that if this is whoever is behind this, this movement, and you know, I'm going to take your word for it that you think it's Jewish inspired. I can see that. Aren't they being short-sighted? Because the Jews are a parasitic people. They need a prosperous middle class. They need productive people to feed off of. The mud that you're describing here is not going to be productive enough for them to feed. How is that going to work for them?
I think that we tend to give them a little bit more credit for long-range planning intelligence than they deserve. There is this myth that Jews are supposed to be smarter than other people. That's not quite true. Jews are not truly intelligent. If you look at their own Yiddish culture, they stole it from every place else. They stole the language from German and so forth and so on. Jews are not really intelligent. They're clever, which there's a difference. They're very good at what, historically speaking, is short-term planning. They're very good at their own survival. They have perfected a technique of boring into their host cultures and taking them over and, in essence, draining them dry. But they probably simply don't think that far. Either that, or they think that they'll be able to snaffle the Chinese like they destroyed the white man, which I don't think they'll be able to do, because, you see, Jews are Asiatics, but so are the Chinese. I don't think the Chinese will put up with their mess when it finally comes down to it a few centuries from now. And they're going to wish they had some of those nice burly white policemen and soldiers to fight their enemies like they did in World War II. Yeah, I agree. In the long run, from their point of view, it's short-sighted. Also, you got to bear in mind, while it's true that the agenda, as I call it, with a capital A, is largely Jewish-inspired, it's inspired by Jewish principles such as pure materialism, it's not just the Jews. It is a very complex tendency. Much greater intellects than mine have spent their entire lives writing books of great length, explaining how all this works. But a large part of the problem is not just the Jews, it is our own weakness. The white race has a number of character flaws that we have never been able to successfully address. One of them
Why don't you articulate those? Because this is, you know, you've got me curious. It's always good to criticize your own people, because that's how you strengthen yourself. You know what I mean? Walk around thinking you're wonderful and can't be improved, that's BS. And I think that we have to be more critical of ourselves than we are of any other people.
Well, for one thing, white people as a race are the only people who seem to be capable of feeling empathy and compassion for other peoples. In many respects, people like the blacks and the mestizos and the Asians are much truer to nature than we are. Nature is competition. Nature is survival of the fittest. And we have acquired, down through the centuries, this empathy, this compassion, this sense of fairness. I mean, the classic example is Adolf Hitler refusing to destroy the British Army at Dunkirk. He said, well, I don't want to really hurt these people too bad. They're our racial brothers. And, you know, they know we could have destroyed them at Dunkirk, but I want to, you know, show them a little mercy. Maybe they'll be reasonable. And, of course, they weren't. I'll give you another good example. You know, white people are the only people on the earth who are concerned for the environment. Where are your Chinese or your South American environmentalists? They don't exist. We feel too much. When we are at our intellectual height, we're unbeatable, but when we let our feelings get involved, we tend to go all soft and mushy. And the simple fact is that with all of this other stuff added in, that is a fatal weakness. The fact is we are simply too compassionate to people who want to destroy us. We are no longer able as a race to bring ourselves to make the cold, hard decisions that are necessary. Not only
Harold, I got to interrupt you here. We're getting deep into our bumper music. Be right back, folks. More with Harold Covington. Mike Harris on Rinse.com, RinceRadio.com, let me correct myself. My guest this evening is Mr. Harold Covington on this, the spring equinox. So, Harold, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Well, let me ask you another question, and that is, you know, whenever we have a weakness, let's say we have a physical weakness in our body, we can go to rehab, we you know, go to physical therapy, we can go to the gym, we can lift weights, we can strengthen. Let's say our left arm is weaker than our right arm, we can go to the gym, we can work that left arm really hard and strengthen it. How do we as a people, we as a race, strengthen what are our inherent weaknesses, this compassion, this egalitarianism, this sense of fair play? I mean, we've always thought those were virtues and things, and yet they're being used to destroy our culture, destroy our people, destroy our race. How do we fight this?
Well, for one thing, we're not going to be able to afford to be so compassionate and empathetic. Compassion and empathy and mercy and all these are very nice. They're luxuries that you can afford when you're on top, when you're in control, and when you have a prosperous and wealthy society. When there's a lot in the pot, you can afford to pass a little bit around. But the situation that the white man is facing in the coming years in this country and in Europe and everywhere we exist is rapidly deteriorating to the point where there simply isn't enough to go around in the way of wealth, resources, basic needs like food, etc., etc. So, frankly, we're going to either have to learn to become barbarians again, or we're going to die out. Unfortunately, I think that means a lot of us are just going to die out. I don't believe that a large percentage of the white population of this country is capable of surviving in a truly Darwinian environment where everybody's on his own and you either fend for yourself or you die. And we'll just have to see how that plays out. But there also needs to be a spiritual realization of who we are. Now, one of our old leaders, Pastor Robert Miles, was asked once by some reporter something, what exactly is a racist? And Bob said, a racist is someone who knows who he is. We white people, we men of the West, have to come to understand who we are. We have to know who our enemies are. We have to understand what has been done to us over the past century or so. We have to understand that by right, this world and its entire contents belong to us. And we lost it because we were too weak, we were too easily distracted. We got into things like race mixing and every other blasted thing. And Commander Rockwell, it's another problem we have with our character, especially white men and now, unfortunately, white women, race mixing, miscegenation. Commander Rockwell called it the lure of the exotic. When white men achieve the pinnacle, when we achieve a stable society, wealth, and peace and prosperity, we get easily bored. White people need challenges. Now, we're coming into a time in history when, once more, we will be challenged for our very survival. I think that's going to do a lot of it for us. It will probably involve the white population of the earth becoming even more of a minority than it is now. But at some point in time, the little light bulb is going to come on over our heads, and we're going to realize, hey, we're this tiny little minority on the globe, and we've got the whole world against us, and they're trying to kill us all. We better get our act together. At least I hope that's what's going to happen. That's what we're trying to make happen up here in the Northwest, the Northwest Front. Now, we've given our people the plan. These other groups, their intentions are good, but no one really has an actual political plan for the survival of the white race to implement the 14 words of David Lane. We do, and we are finally, after many, many years, starting to see some forward motion on this. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But I am actually, in the long run, optimistic. If I can get a little bit metaphysical here, I just don't believe that God would create something as magnificent as the white man and then let him just wander off into the swamp and sink down into the mud and just say, yeah, well, okay, that's him. I think I'll go play with the blacks for a while. I don't think it works that way. But we will see. The white man is capable of fixing this. We will be capable of fixing this and pulling ourselves out of the swamp right up until the 11th hour, the 59th minute, the 59th second, because we really are the greatest race in the history of mankind, the smartest, the toughest, the most adaptable, and the most creative on earth. We can do this. The question is, will we do it?
Well, that is the question, and there hasn't been a need so far. But, I mean, all it would take is one black swan event. You know, imagine there's a solar flare or an EMP weapon is deployed against the U.S. And the power grid goes down coast to coast. And it's down. It's not going to come back up for 5 years. How are things going to survive? How are people going to sustain themselves?
5 years? I don't think the overwhelming majority of whites would be able to function or last for 6 months totally, completely without power. I think that's all it would take to cause us to revert to our natural state, so to speak. No, really, look at American society, how complex it is. Suppose something like that did happen, and all of a sudden there was no electricity, there were no big 18-wheeler trucks pulling up to the local Safeway to load up the store with groceries, no gas, no power, and all of a sudden winter's coming on, and if you don't have a fire or a fireplace to warm yourself by, you're going to freeze to death. And if you don't go out and obtain food however you can obtain it, including, if necessary, taking it from monkoids, then your family's going to die. Most white people will perish in a situation like that because we've just simply become too soft and civilized, but a small minority will survive. That small minority that would eventually conquer and repopulate the earth with white people. I think.
Well, I'll tell you, just a funny aside on this is, you know, my son's got this computer game. It's how long would you survive after the zombie apocalypse? And I got 89 days.
Okay.
89 days is all I would survive after that.
Well, the problem is real life is not a video game.
No, I understand, but it's just humorous to me that, you know, people think about this stuff and that, you know, you could apply this, you know, to real life lessons if there is something happening. And,
I think that's one of the reasons for the popularity of things like zombie apocalypse movies, natural disaster movies, meteors crashing into the earth movies, like, you know, that, I can't remember the name of it now, but that really cool one where Los Angeles sinks into the sea. It was 2012, I think it was. Anyway, I think a lot of white Americans long secretly to see this horrible thing that we live in collapse. I do remember that in the 1996, the movie Independence Day, yeah, I know it had that monkoid Will Smith and blah, 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 but there's a lot wrong with it. But I actually have a copy of that movie on DVD, and when I am really down in the dumps, I will get it out, and I will play the scene where the flying saucer blows up the White House. And I remember at the time that movie came into the theaters, people were puzzled and a bit worried because everybody in the movie theater in most places was actually cheering when the White House got blown up. This is when Clinton was in.
Well, Harold, I got to give you another movie to go watch. And I have to give you a tool to do it. There's something on the internet called Noobroom. NOOBROOM. You can Google it. You can go on Ixquick, which is a private one, but it's Noobroom, NOOBROOM 5 or Noobroom 7. And it allows you access to all the latest release movies out there for free. You can watch them on your computer. It's a great thing. That's what I, since I don't have TV, that's what I do. But the movie I want to point out to you is one called Elysium, starring Matt Damon. Now, Matt Damon is miscast, intentionally miscast in that movie, because you like Matt Damon. He's a big, strong, Aryan white guy, and he's down there with the mud people, where the conditions on Earth got so bad that white people, the people who produce, the people who invent, the people who create, had to move off planet, had to create an orbiting habitat for themselves because the mud took over everything. And
well, that's your Soylent Green Society that I was talking about earlier.
But I'll tell you, you will enjoy this movie. Just don't look at Matt Damon as a white guy. He should have been cast as a Hispanic or a black or something else, anything but white. But they cast him. They miscast him on purpose for the propaganda value.
Oh yeah.
But it's really. And Jodie Foster is brilliant. I mean, I've never been a Jodie Foster fan. This was her best role ever.
Well, I'll check that out.
Oh, you should. You should. You will like the movie. You'll like it a lot. You'll see the Hollywood influence, if you know what I'm talking about. You'll know.
Yeah.
You'll see it everywhere.
One thing you got to bear in mind. One thing I've learned to do over the years is to look at certain TV series and certain Hollywood movies and everything. You've got to learn to tune out all the liberal Jewish crap. And get at the essence of the movie. And I'm pretty good at that. I think some of my people think I'm a bit touched in the head. Every now and then I will watch on DVD. I don't have cable either. I'll watch things like, FBI crime shows, Criminal Minds, Bones, that sort of stuff. And it concentrates my fury. I hate it when I see these people being presented as heroes. They're not, because I have to deal with them in real life.
That's one thing that you have to realize, people, that what you see on TV is not real life. And the blacks you see on TV aren't like the blacks you bump into in real life. That's just not how. Same with the FBI, same with everybody else.
I hear your music coming. Is this it?
This is it, Harold. I want to thank you so much.
Hey, one quick thing, Mike. Can I get my website on real quick?
Yes, you can.
You want to find out more about the Northwest Front? It's www.northwestfront, all one word, northwestfront.org.
All right, Harold, and the next time I have you on, which will be soon, I want you to discuss the tactics of the IRA and how they can be applied.
Okay.
All right, thank you, sir. Have a great evening, everybody. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll talk to you all then. Everybody have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right.